how do you explain things which no one can see, feel, or have any sort of empirical evidence for existence?
Well, you just have to have faith.
But faith doesn't...
And that's it. Argument over. Done. That, he wins.
Wow.
Capricious.
Sapidity.
Podcast. Is eclectic, you know, it's basically everything else that I've learned and the things that I think make sense.
Yet so, you believe in ghosts.
No, I don't believe in ghosts.
But you're highly interested in them.
Yeah, like, if I clearly had to say it, I'd say that there is a very high probability that there are no ghosts. As high a probability as there's no God, so.
Yeah.
No, they're probably not going to be ghosts. But that doesn't make me not interested in religion and ghosts, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So I still read books about ghosts, and I still read articles about, I mean, and sometimes read books about religion.
How much of the Bible have you read?
Oh, I read the King James's Bible. Not that Bible, but it's paraphrased King James Bible.
The Spark Notes version of the Bible. Is that a thing we have to say? Spark Notes Bible. Yes.
No, the one that I read had like 200 plus pages, so I put a lot of work into it. Oh, there you go.
Yes!
The Old and the New Testament.
The Old and New Testament.
Analysis of major characters.
They know me so well. I want to learn about Jesus, but I'm...
Do you have anything about the altar? What does it say? No, important quotations explained, quizzes, key facts. That is cool. I think it should be in like the global domain because so many people wrote it. You know?
That's funny. It is public domain, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. Exodus.
Movement of jumping ball. You know, yeah.
Exodus!
I'm often asked, and occasionally in an accusatory way, are you atheist? You know, the only ist I am is a scientist, all right? I don't associate with movements. I'm not an ism. I think for myself. The moment once someone attaches you to a philosophy or a movement, then they assign all the baggage and all the rest of the philosophy that goes with it to you. And when you want to have a conversation, they will assert that they already know everything important there is to know about you because of that association. And that's not the way to have a conversation. I'm sorry, it's not. I'd rather we explore each other's ideas in real time rather than assign a label to it and assert you know what's going to happen in advance. So what people are really after is, what is my stance on religion or spirituality or God? And I would say if I had to find a word that came closest, it would be agnostic. Agnostic, a word dates from the 19th century. Huxley. To refer to someone who doesn't know but hasn't yet really seen evidence for it, but is prepared to embrace the evidence if it's there, but if it's not, it won't be forced to have to think something that is not otherwise supported. Okay? There are many atheists who say, well, all agnostics are atheists. Like, okay. I'm constantly claimed by atheists. I find this intriguing. In fact, on my wiki page, I didn't create the wiki page, others did, and I'm flattered that people cared enough about my life to assemble it. And it said, Neil deGrasse Tyson is an atheist. I said, well, that's not really true. I said, Neil deGrasse Tyson is an agnostic. Went back a week later, it said Neil Tyson is an atheist again, within a week. And I said, what's up with that? And I said, all right, now I have to word it a little differently. So I said, okay, Neil deGrasse Tyson, widely claimed by atheists, is actually an agnostic. And some will say, well, that's, you're not being fair to the fact that they're actually the same thing. No, they're not the same thing, and I'll tell you why. atheists I know who proudly wear the badge are active atheists. They're like in your face atheists, and they want to change policies, and they're having debates. I don't have the time, the interest, the energy to do any of that. I'm a scientist. I'm an educator. My goal is to get people thinking straight in the first place. Just get you to be curious about the natural world. That's what I'm about. I'm not about any of the rest of this. And it's odd that the word atheist even exists. I don't play golf. Is there a word for non-golf players? Do non-golf players gather and strategize? Do non-skiers have a word and come together and talk about the fact that they don't ski? I can't do that. I can't gather around and talk about how much everybody in the room doesn't believe in God. I don't have the energy for that. And so agnostic separates me from the conduct of atheists, whether or not there's strong overlap between the two categories. And at the end of the day, I'd rather not be any category at all.
First words, I really respect Neil deGrasse Tyson as a scientist and as a media personnel who represents science in this pop culture world, but I believe his argument is fallacious here on two major accounts. Firstly, his definition of atheism was fallacious. He merged the term atheist with the term neo-atheist, which is what Dawkins and Dawkins and Hitchens and all these Harris, all these neo atheists are.
Sam Harris,
yeah. Which, in their own right, are educated scientists. However, atheist and a neo atheist are two different things. And secondly, after he classified atheism and neo atheism as the same thing, he went on to say that he was a agnostic, if that's the closest he could get to anything. However, and that he was apathetic to preaching atheism. And then he said that his goal in life was to educate people. However, that's a conflicting viewpoint, because if you want to educate a person, then at least in the science and the astrophysicists and all of these things that he is associated with, there's a big chunk of that which is influenced directly by religion and theism of all sorts. So if he really wants to progress in his job, he would have to attempt to answer those questions. And if he just says, I just don't have time to deal with the religious questions, he would be a scientist who doesn't really do all of his job. And now, he said that he was an agnostic in the sense that he didn't really believe in anything, but was accepting to change his opinion. To an extent, I could kind of argue that that's also what an atheist does. You see, as he said, why does the word atheist exist? It's like the opposite of playing golf. You know, there's no word for that. Correct. That's where the term atheism originates from. It is a, which is not, or the opposite of theism, which is the belief in some supernatural deity. So if a person classifies himself as an atheist, he isn't necessarily saying he's a neo-atheist in the sense that, you know, if there's a poll, he's going to go and say, oh, ban God from everything. He's just not affiliated with any form of theism. And anyone who's not affiliated with any form of theism would be an atheist. Now, in that sense of the word, it could be argued that agnosticism is a form of atheism which branches off on its own to a more skeptical environment. And I think there's a lot of murky water, and hence he kind of wants to, you know... Firstly, I think one of the reasons he wants to not be classified as an ardent atheist is because he's just kind of like a cool guy, and if you just are a very neo-atheist, even in this world, you know, it's, you're sort of vilified, in a sense.
It's sad, but it's also the fact that, excuse me, by classifying yourself as an atheist, you're essentially ruling out any possibility of things you can't possibly know. Things, surely there's not evidence to be found one way,
well, I
but it's also the other way.
Yeah, I just...
If I may disagree.
Yes,
go ahead. I think that atheism and agnosticism deal with two different branches of philosophy. Atheism deals with belief, whereas agnosticism deals with knowledge. what you can have. I mean, it's in the exactly. Word. So I think agnosticism is actually sort of probably the only true fact of life, is that you can't be certain about anything.
Yeah.
You can't be certain that the sun's going to rise tomorrow, but you still believe in it because you have evidence to prove it. So if we base belief on evidence, I think that's where atheism tends to go towards instead of blind faith. Another difference you need to make is dogmatic atheism, whereas, the anti-theists, and they have a point, they're trying to get rid of religion because they see it as possibly harming, and right now harming, the welfare of humanity. That's one way to do it, but I believe that the best way would be to educate people, in logic or in philosophy, and show them other ways of thought to be able to disprove the religion and... get everyone to believe
on
that evidence.
I agree. Now, another basic reasoning for this sudden surge of atheism, I believe, is education. If you look at the history of mankind, there has always been some skepticism, but the harsh reality, the nihilistic shadow of doubt and hopelessness sometimes courses humans to, hold on to beliefs. And that is one of the reasons why religion, is really huge, especially if you even go to third world countries where, people barely have any hope. What do they have? Religion to hold on to. Whereas you go to first world countries, look at France, almost a majority of the population classifies themselves as atheists or agnostics.
What the fuck?
Scientifically, I believe that atheism tends to dominate the field because of the general philosophical tool of an Occam's razor, the fact that, or a Dawkins's razor, a Hitchens's razor, Dawkins made it, but anyway, which is basically that, you don't need to prove something that doesn't exist. You don't need to disprove something that someone else claims exists without any proof, and Occam's razor is basically that Occam's razor is that basically if you can find an answer to a question without as minimal of convoluted reasoning as possible, and as direct an answer, it should be the most acceptable answer. Prove that it fills every criteria. So that's basically Occam's razor. All right.
And he also had the point of, the nomenclature of atheist being sort of misleading because it's a negative word. It doesn't really tell you what you believe in, it tells you what you don't believe in. Yeah. So I like his use of scientist, but skeptic might be the better choice there.
I guess.
Bringing up the topic of William Lane Craig's debates, he argues a form of deism or theism, which are two completely different things, but he argues it often with atheists and skeptics. Deism is probably as far you can get with logic and reason. You can't really go past deism in the world of philosophy unless going out on blind faith. So
I take it you guys fully believe in the concept of new atheism, coined by the four horsemen of atheism, Dawkins, Dennett, Harris, and Hitchens.
See, you can't really believe in the concept of new atheism because it's more or less just a couple of atheists who want to change the current social culture pertaining to... religion itself?
The primary two are Dawkins and Dennett, because Harris believes in a form of spirituality.
And he Hitchens practices is dead, so.
Buddhism. And Hitchens even disagreed with some of them on being called brights, the bright movement.
Oh, yeah.
Made others seem stupid, which some people are just ignorant, people who don't have much education, and they're just told by their community.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate, but that just stresses the need more for education.
That blows
versus the wind that doesn't blow.
The wind that blows is as old as time on this earth.
How old is time? Well, wind isn't a material thing. Wind
is just... It is the pressure differences, right?
Not the best example you could have given.
Oh, yeah, you're right. But there are many things. Okay, how about this? I could give a better example. Okay, take a rock.
There we go, that works.
Yeah, and just break it. The inside of the rock has been the same for thousands and thousands of years. You were literally seeing the world as it was thousands and thousands of years ago.
But at the same time, a thousand years is just a blink of the eye in the span of the universe. So what is a thousand years?
Which brings us to our next question. What happened before the Big Bang?
Magnets.
Jesus.
I like what Stephen Hawking said about it. Measuring what came before time is like measuring south of the South Pole, you know, or measuring, you know, direction in the universe. Yeah. You know, you can't go past or measuring the edge of the world. Because,
the edge, there is no edge. Dude, no edge. You know, there is no edge to the universe.
Yeah, it's just a ridiculous topic to discuss.
It's actually, this is used by lots of theists to, you know, counter the atheistic argument, but their question is, well, you all say that the Big Bang started it all. What was before the Big Bang? Well, if you think about it, if your God started it all, what was before your God? Was it another God? Was it a God over a God? You know, it's an ad infinitum regress, right? A regress ad infinitum. So it basically proves
nothing. Well, then they say, well, God is infinite and he's outside of time.
Well,
which you could say of the universe.
Yeah, yeah, why can you not replace everything you're saying with the universe? Because then your God is such a passive creator that he literally doesn't interfere with the world at all.
Whoa, stop right there.
Question for Eric.
What is your evidence with God? Do you have, because whenever you have, God talking to you, it's just, one part of your brain actually talking to yourself.
Sounds like Max has been talking to this young man.
It's his son.
I know. What is my evidence of God? Well, your dad's okay with this. The proof of God is that without God, you can't know anything. And that's exactly what we've seen here. Is we've seen somebody say, I could be wrong about everything. They've given up knowledge in order to deny the God that they know exists. And that's why the Bible says it is so foolish. To deny God.
So you're saying if I don't know what one thing is, I don't know what everything is.
No, I'm saying if you don't know everything, then you can't know anything to be absolutely true.
So if I don't know everything in the world, then I don't know that you exist?
Unless you have revelation from somebody who does know everything. And that somebody that does know everything is God.
So
and young man...
So that means if I don't know everything, that means that I don't know if God exists.
You can't know anything. You can't even... Yeah, you can't... The argument... And I'm sorry. Max, thanks for trying to get a... How old are you, buddy?
This was not me.
How old are you? 11. To get
He's been raising his hand the whole time.
That's fine. And I do appreciate... And these are good questions. But the argument is actually kind of simple. It just says, look, you would have to know everything in order to say you know one thing to be absolutely certain. Or somebody who does know everything could reveal something to you so that you could be certain. We all deal in the realm of certainty. We deal with 2 + 2 = 4. You don't go to the bank and ask for change for a $100 bill and then give you $5 and go, huh, I guess it changed. No, you go based on certainty. If I, for example, what was your name?
Chad.
Chad, if I knew everything there was to know, if I had all knowledge and you didn't, and there was a rule that said, I am never, ever, ever allowed to tell a lie. And I said, Chad, I know everything. I'm not allowed to lie. 2 + 2 = 4. Could you now know that to be true, even though you, Chad, don't know everything? Could you know if I knew everything?
I know that 2 + 2 = 4.
Right. If I knew everything and I couldn't lie and I told you 2 + 2 = 4, could you trust that to be true?
Yes, because I know it.
There's right. But
there's no proof for God.
Have you seen the Richard Dawkins response to the what if you're wrong question?
I haven't.
But as he's searching that, let's talk about that. First of all, his argument, it was like, if you don't know everything, you can't know something, which is true in effect, but in order to know everything, he says you have to know something, that something being the proof of God, or that God exists, so that's, you can't be certain of God, which breaks down his whole argument, is what I got out of it.
Yeah, well, his argument was very much baseless and circular, and, well, he was a neo-Earth creationist or whatever, like the ones who believe that they're...
You like
the
Neo, is, don't you?
He's like, he believes that the
Neo-Nazi,
world is...
Neo-fascism.
I am a neo-Nazi.
Neo-atheist.
I am a neo-Nazi, but anyway. Yeah,
you, in your spare time.
In my spare time.
It's a hobby.
It's I'm a baker by profession, you see, so when I have
like
free
time...
Like
what he said, 2 + 2 = 4, you can't know that without receiving revelation from someone who knows everything. So you can't be sure of that revelation, first of all, but you can be sure 2 + 2 = 4... Like, I mean, you can't even be sure of numbers, which is goes back to agnosticism. You can't be sure of anything, so there's no point in arguing that and then saying, "But I know because I received revelation from someone."
That's not logical. That's a third grader saying, "Oh no, I know something you don't know, and I won't tell you how I know it." Haha, yeah. You know. And he's arguing with a sixth grader.
That's a bit of a problem.
This is probably going to be the most simplest one for you to answer, but. What if you're wrong?
Well, what if I'm wrong? I mean, anybody could be wrong. We could all be wrong about the flying spaghetti monster and the pink unicorn and the flying teapot. You happen to have been brought up, I would presume, in the Christian faith. You know what it's like not to believe in a particular faith because you're not a Muslim. You're not a Hindu. Why aren't you a Hindu? Because you happen to have been brought up in America, not in India. If you'd been brought up in India, you'd be a Hindu. If you were brought up in Denmark in the time of the Vikings, you'd be believing in Wotan and Thor. If you were brought up in classical Greece, you'd be believing in Zeus. If you were brought up in Central Africa, you'd be believing in the great Juju up the mountain. There's no particular reason to pick on the Judeo-Christian God in which, by the sheerest accident, you happen to have been brought up and ask me the question, what if I'm wrong? What if you're wrong about the great Juju at the bottom of the sea?
He was at, I think, Liberty University, which is a Christian school, college, and he just responded to question after question, just knocked him down.
This was, wasn't this like after the debate when he was taking questions, or was this?
Yeah,
like...
he argues for about maybe 10, 20 minutes, and then the rest of the time it's just open to questions, and they have a ton of questions. They don't seem too sure.
You have people like him and Hitchens who are just...
Hitchens was actually,
for lack of a better word, master debaters. It's ridiculous the skill they have in debating.
Yeah, but Hitchens was a lot more pompous and cocky. Yeah. You know,
I miss Hitch.
Yeah, his debates. They were just so eloquent, and secondly, he actually attacked the Christian fundamentalists.
Yeah.
Who, you know, debated with him and any deist too.
And he was the only person who brought up a somewhat compelling argument for the Iraq War, or the only one who would be intelligent enough to even take that side.
Originally, he was people deemed him as a very, very harsh Republican for his very strong stance on, you know, bombing the shit out of the Middle East.
I mean, simplistic enough, he really just believed that there were bad people and that
totalitarianism
has the right to, has the right to take out those people.
Which, I mean, maybe he was right in the grander sense, you know, of history, but we can't, we as people living through a certain, time of history, we can't really think of it that way. You know, we're like, oh no, but what about the people? Well, okay, here's a tangential question. Will Osama bin Laden be remembered as a very prominent figure through history, you know? Has he won the greater war by being known as this big person? Like, this is of bastardization, but look at Genghis Khan. We remember him as this super badass person. We have freaking Genghis Grill.
He ran train. Don't talk about Genghis.
No, I'm just saying, you know.
Something
but,
like 12.5% of
people
can root their ancestry back to one man.
Yeah,
that
the more you know.
He won life.
I said it's... See, but the thing is, the argument remains the same. It's a gross bastardization of, you know, comparing these two, but still, Osama bin Laden pretty much melted the U.S. economy by putting so much money into the military. He made so many people in the Middle East die for no reason. He virtually pulled the U.S. from the top of global dominance to something which is going to devolve into something like, hey, yeah, we remember the glory days, you know?
It's essentially very equivalent to the end of the Roman Empire. You see it, the same science.
Yeah, but so when we read history, will we think, ah, yeah, America was a great empire, and then came Osama bin Laden, who single-handedly pulled U.S. down to the pits.
I actually have a book called Are We Rome? And it traces the similarities between America and Rome, yeah, especially linguistically, which, you know, has my interest. Because you look at when a language, I call it the Babel curse, just for lack of a better word. Whenever a language gets too widespread, it starts devolving into dialects, which evolve into languages. And that's what's being seen in America. You have Ebonics, you have Spanglish and Franglais. And,
yeah, and whatever the Boston people speak.
Yeah. And whatever Jamaicans speak. Have you heard Jamaicans speak?
That is not English. Even though it is English, it's not English.
Shout out to the Marley clan. No disrespect.
Yeah, man. That was really bad. But, yeah, so the question is Osama bin Laden essentially going to win this larger battle? Has he already done that?
Martyrdom.
Unless he wasn't killed and it's all a conspiracy.
Honestly, he was probably killed way before this whole thing happened. Honestly.
Who knows?
Have you seen Zero Dark 30?
Oh my god, the trailer made me want to just...
Yeah, I didn't want to watch it. I don't like Catherine Bigelow.
I don't want to live in this planet. Didn't she do The Hurt Locker, though?
She did The Hurt Locker. Amazing. That should have won.
Yeah, well, did it win? I think it won.
Yeah, it won, but I don't think it should have. I just don't like military movies winning.
They always have some sort of propaganda.
I go for the most artistic film, so I don't like...
Have you seen Full Metal Jacket?
No.
You should see that movie. It might change it.
But have you seen...
I've seen Platoon. I like Platoon. They're not even though I don't like Oliver Stone.
They're not all biased, though. Some of them are just objective analysis of war. Or portrayals.
Well, Kubrick was Full Metal Jacket.
You can never do that if you want to, you know, document anything. You can never just... document something, and at least, you know, in the form of movies, you can never do that. I didn't. You make a movie about war, it's not going to be completely neutral. You know, there's always going to be some bias.
But not in the actual filmmaking. You can film people you can film the events that actually happened, which might show interviews with people who have crazy biased views, but you're objectively portraying those people and what they stand for and what's going on. It's still an objective film, technically. Yeah.
What's that Spielberg film, 3:30 to Iwo Jima or something?
Yeah, 3:10 to Iwo Jima.
3:10 to Iwo Jima.
No, that's 3:10 to Yuma. I'm thinking of
another good movie.
Iwo Jima, something about Iwo Jima.
Letters from Iwo Jima?
Yeah, Letters from Iwo Jima. That was
Flags of Our Fathers, too. Same
Flags
story.
Of Our Fathers. And,
yeah, see, that was not really...
Saving Private Ryan.
Saving Private Ryan. Yeah, Private Ryan. It showed the evils of war.
And that loss to Shakespeare in Love.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
I like Shakespeare in Love.
Artistic.
All right, this is one on the topic of movies. Let's talk about one that just came out, Django. Have you guys both seen
it? Yes.
So good.
Very good. And Tarantino got slammed with all these criticisms.
He won Best Screenplay, though.
He did. For the Golden Globe, I don't think the Academy would do it.
But I thought Golden Globes make more sense than the Academy. Academy is almost more, you know, pop culture biased. But anyway.
He got slammed for his use of the N-word. Breaking the record, I think.
Here's the thing. What is the stigma with other people using the N-word? And I feel like the N-word rather than saying nigger. And I don't mean it in an offensive way at all. You know, I'm just talking about a word. I'm not saying something derogatory towards an African American.
I think it's
person
a particular. It's like a linguistic thing. It doesn't sound right if a certain person
is this
says
strange
it.
That we give this magical power to words that we're not allowed to say.
Yeah,
that we have you hold
connotation
this exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so silly.
We did kind of talk about
it. We've talked about this many times,
because it's just a sound.
It
doesn't mean anything.
With your mouth. It doesn't do anything. Mm-hmm. It's all about context and what you mean behind the word, not the actual word itself.
But, well, in that movie, it was just historically accurate.
Yeah, it was probably one of the more historically accurate, despite all the...
times,
It was... what's the word? It didn't have? What's another word for that?
Lacked.
My brain, I said a brain fart. Apologies. It lacked just the Hollywood bullshit that you see that with every movie, they take a good concept and they just make it all palatable for the general American Christian market you can't swear, you can't do anything offensive, anything different. It has to be the same cookie-cutter movie you see every time.
Yeah.
They did something original, which I loved.
Yeah, I mean, the violence aspect of it is, like, more okay these days, I guess. It's more easy to have violent movies, but still, I think, you know, there's still a stigma on race. There's always still a stigma.
It's such a double standard, because you have all this freedom violence-wise, but you can't have any sex, you can't have any...
You can't have... Yeah, you can't have sexuality, you can't have different orientations, so you cannot have
and
anything.
And the writing system is so biased.
Have you seen the lobbyist documentary, This Film Is Not Yet Rated? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's on Netflix, you can see it. It just describes the hypocrisy and bureaucracy of the rating system. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just such an arbitrary lobbying group, who's just like, arbitrary. Hey, we're made of random people who... You know, consider family values.
It's like going to McDonald's and complaining about getting obese. It's like...
It's disgusting. But I'm anti-censorship in pretty much every sense, though. At least I am.
Oh, yeah.
Censorship. Well, there has to be...
And they say, if you don't censor, you know, crime's going to increase. Well, let's look at some of the countries that censor the most. North Korea doesn't have that much crime. They may have, you know, totalitarianism. Or let's look at... the other side of that being complete no censorship at all, which, like, Denmark, Scandinavian countries primarily, and they Iceland. Don't... Iceland, yeah, and they don't have that much crime. So you have the two extremes if you have full censorship, but then you're comparing totalitarianism to freedom, so...
Yeah, but you were saying there's some instances where...
Censorship, I believe... To an extent, is necessary. I mean, we would like to live in a world with no censorship, at least, you know, the educated, moral individuals, because they know, in a certain sense, what is, quote-unquote, correct, you know, or the correct conduct, in a sense. However, if you look at the economy, look at a country as a whole, from a political and a social aspect, I believe that... Is it...
No, go.
That would suck if it was off.
Ignore my messages.
Okay, so, I believe there is some sort of censorship that is required, because kids and stuff, take for example.
Well, define censorship.
Yes, please.
Okay, censorship is the...
That's what we should have done to begin with.
Yeah. That's how...
hold on.
Okay.
We'll get a Wikipedia
definition of censorship. The authority on everything.
Wikipedia is never wrong.
Never. Except they're just mistaken. Neil deGrasse Tyson when they... label him an atheist when he's not an atheist.
They're just mistaken. They're not wrong.
Who is it? Benjamin, you're the best speaker here.
Okay.
Read it out.
Speaker. All right. According to the All Source, Wikipedia, censorship is the suppression of speech or other public communication which may be considered objectionable, harmful, sensitive, or inconvenient as determined by a government, media outlet, or other controlling body. Well, you have a lot of... subjectivity there.
Oh, yeah, well, of course, but you see, the thing with definitions is that you can try to pinpoint the actual meaning, however, you have to leave some subjectivity so that people can interpret it, and, you know, the law can be flexible enough to circumscribe every aspect of that. You know, I mean, it looks bad if you... It's like SOPA, you know? It seems like a good idea, but the thing that it might do is potentially just disastrous. Yeah. However, with this definition of censorship, I believe... there is some censorship that is still required, you know. It's the same idea with a total anarchy. I believe that...
You have to define specific examples. Where is censorship okay?
Where is censorship okay?
Well, like I said, North Korea is almost fully censored.
Okay, where is censorship okay? Well, if people...
America... Are you asking right now where is censorship
considered?
Your personal subjective
opinion.
Okay.
I retract my previous statement. So, for that, I think the whole idea of censorship would extend onto what is legal. You know, if something is objectionable, you will censor it, but if it's very objectionable, you will criminalize it. So, my question to you is, to what extent should we criminalize things? Because, you see, killing is a criminal activity, right? But in theater previews and all, we see so many people get killed.
Well, it's considered objectionable because a group of people considers it objectionable. You have to, you know, differentiate between laws and morality.
Laws and morality.
Laws don't always reflect morality.
Yeah, but laws do stem from the general consensus of morality.
Yeah,
unfortunately, yes.
So, majority rule.
Yeah. And also, like, a cynic in me wants to say that...
More like angry mob justice, if you ask me, but...
Pitchforks, bring the pitchforks. Okay. Yeah, but, the cynic in me says that people want to be subjugated to an extent. You know, that's why there is, in a sense, religion. Why?
Government.
Why there's, government, more or less. But yeah, subjugation, like, it was Nietzsche's idea that, you know, humankind's want to be suppressed. Like, one very liberating aspect of religion is, like, when you feel you don't really know what's happening, you would just want to give it all to God and, you know, let him
guide you. Because you're exchanging freedom for protection in a way. Yeah,
it's you want to give away your own personal responsibilities in life and let somebody else take care of it.
Yeah, that's responsibilities.
And that's, you know, that's the more existential, absurdist topic. How people say that people without any religion or God would be amoral or immoral, you know, in any sense of that word. But if anything, it gives you more responsibility because, you know, you are existing and you are you and your future depends on yourself, you know? So, yeah. I believe that, I don't know, what were you talking about? Censorship?
What should be censored?
Yeah, I still believe that, you know, some laws are required and hence on some censorship.
Well, I mean, for us, let's narrow it down. I'm pretty sure we could all say child pornography should be censored, right?
Yeah.
Wait, I'd like to question that.
Of course you would, women. Of course you would.
Okay. Well, let's narrow it down. Let's narrow it down censorship first of all. Let's just say in, like, movies and music.
No, I mean, yeah, but just a general question. Why is the age of consent 18? Why not, like, 16? Why not 15?
Well, it's an American thing for 18.
Yeah, see? And see, we can have pornography with 18-year-olds, but not 17-year-olds, because that's child pornography, you know?
It's a very fine line, but you have to make that line somewhere. You know what I mean?
See, that means you're believing in some sort of government and some sort of censorship.
Yeah, that's true.
I thought we were supposed to be talking about a murder of crows.
So, in case you guys didn't know out there, a group of crows is called a murder of crows. The more you know, knowledge is power. Okay, that's our
crow. I don't like NBC.
Yeah, you should quote that.
The more you know.
The more you know. Knowledge is fundamental.
Reading is fundamental.
Fun.
F is for friends who do stuff together. U is for you and me.
I'm glad I don't know that.
From the greatest atheist mind of our generation, SpongeBob.
What? Alright, I'll take it.
Okay, think about it this way. We are not the only conscious creatures in this world, right? I mean, that's arguable, but...
I talk to my dog all the time.
Dolphins are smart as fuck. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise, yes.
Yeah, no. Yeah, the meaning of the life is 42, but there are many intelligent animals, right? Now, how
supposedly,
many of these...
Hold on, just a side tangent. Elephants are crazy intelligent. I was never aware of this until recently. They're on the level... I mean, I don't know the specific intelligence level, but...
3-year-old baby or something?
Like, they're one of the smartest creatures on Earth. Yeah.
I don't really know how they quantify this intelligence, but yeah, they are.
Science. Beyond me.
What a fucking science.
I know that.
The more you know.
But anyway.
Science.
So, how many of these animals who were thinking creatures... you know, believe in a greater being, you know? I mean, if everything was created, and it was created by an omnipotent, omniscient creator who was perfect, if he created everything, wouldn't he have created everything perfect? Because he is a perfect entity, right?
No!
Do you say cell phone or mobile phone?
Well, I used to say mobile phone.
I'll ring you on my mobile.
Yeah.
British saying.
Yeah, I used it all the time, but I came here and no one understood that, so I was just like, well, cell phone
it makes more sense than cell. What does cell mean? Or
cellular.
I'm going to stop talking now.
How did I not know that? Five in a glass case of emotion!
The Sandy Hooks conspiracy. Have you guys seen that?
I saw you post it. I didn't look at it, though.
Have you seen the video at all? We could actually play the video. Well, it's 30 minutes long.
We can summarize it.
Okay. The main points of his argument were there were multiple shooters, not just one. He used pistols instead of a rifle. And one of the fathers of one of the children thought dead. He said the child actually wasn't killed and was in a picture with Obama. Stuff like that. But anyway, I found this website that sort of gave reasons for it. One of them being that the second shooter was actually a parent who rushed in to save the children and he was arrested, but he was released later. So it's just another example of, you know, American conspiracy theories.
Okay.
I think those should be taken the same as religion in some aspects because...
I mean, yeah.
They use the same arguments.
Yeah, I mean, religion... I mean, I'm sorry, not religion. But religion is a different idea, but... Yeah, conspiracy theories are just so baseless and counter to any form of logic that believing in any of them without any proof and just listening to some crazy guy babble about crazy stuff and his diatribes about, everything
is this concept that if you want something to be true enough, you'll make it true.
Yeah.
And you'll reason it in every way possible.
But the thing is, it's still not true.
Oh, yeah, of course. And a lot of times, a lot of what they're saying has merit. The problem is they take logical facts and then they make these absurd conclusions from them that don't make any sense.
Yeah, so I tend to stay away from as many, or tend to, you know, not even...
But it sucks for the so-called conspiracies that actually have some merit with them that are completely debunked by all the other conspiracies.
They just get
lumped up in this one category.
Wacko conspiracies.
Yeah.
You know, there might be some out there which might have some merit to it, but it's just
like
because
the
it's
the Kennedy shooting. I mean, can we all agree here that Kennedy was killed by the government?
No,
it's aliens.
Know.
Really? I'm gonna have to show you some videos.
Yeah. I've seen the video of him getting shot. It was pretty badass. Yeah, also,
I saw him get shot.
No way.
I think like one of the only merits of nostalgia is that it helps you connect with people. Like if you meet a random person who's your age and you know you're like, hey, class of '96. It's like, oh yeah, class of '96. Oh man, we had so much fun. This was happening. That was happening. You know, we try to talk about these common experiences that everyone of that era, you know, had so that we can feel like we belong somewhere.
It's a social connection. Like, it's just you having in common something with somebody else. That's how you talk to people. That's how you relate to people. It's, I don't know. It's weird.
I think, like, one of the biggest questions of the future is going to be, like, how different are we? Like, if you think of it, this brilliant and big thing that's happened in the recent past has been the internet, you know? And, like, look at memes. These are just, like, random idiosyncratic things that happen in your life. And then you look at a meme and, like, oh, my God, other people have that, too. You know, these really weird, quirky things. And suddenly we're realizing that everyone is the same.
And it makes a global effort out of it. Because before, nostalgia and things that you relate to were people in your clique. People who grew up near you.
Yeah.
Now you have all these kids of a lost generation of the internet that... from all over the world relate to the same memes and the same things that are being posted online.
It's... Yeah, like, look at the whole Pokemon, Nintendo. The coterie is not just like your proximal friends, it's the world. You know, the whole world experiences almost everything you're experiencing. So I think one of the big revelations of the future is going to be that we all are pretty much the same, you know? Like, before industrialization, we didn't even know how people in other worlds were. We had these very, very, now what we call racist ideas of other people, you know, like people like, oh, Chinamen, they're like not even Chinese and they're weird, and the Africans, they're just, you know, not human beings, literally, they're slaves. And then this whole industrialization happened and we started meeting other people and realized, hey, everyone is a human being. And now this internet thing is happening and realizing, hey, not only is everyone a human being, but everyone is so similar, have everything be so similar, have same emotions, you know?
So in a way, this globalization imperialism is actually good, because even though it technically were taking over other cultures, and we're kind of, one could argue, destroying other cultures, at the same time, we're making it a more universal thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the big things is, like, it's going to promote empathy, because we could relate to that empathy, you know? Because we're like, hey, this person really would have a life and would feel the same way if this happened, you know? And I think it's a good thing. I don't know why it's a bad thing you're destroying cultures. Because, yes, having a culture is a good thing. I'd like to have my culture. But most cultures were very close-minded, mostly because they were closed cultures, you know. They could see so far. So, yeah, that's going to be a thing, you know. Empathy. It's going to be big. Yeah.
So it's a tricky situation, though, because you have this American imperialistic attitude. We need to colonize these people. We need to globalize them, teach them American culture.
Uh-huh.
And in a sense, they're right. But at the same time, you're kind of doing it by means of violence on people that don't want it.
Yeah,
so it's a tricky situation.
So I think what we need to do is just liberate, have liberty, you know? Have the idea of self-expression and freedom to be a thing. I mean,
but if people don't themselves want that, how do you... You can't really force them to do that in a democratic way.
Yeah, you see, the thing is, you don't force people to be free. That's opposite of freedom.
Hypocrisy,
yeah, that's kind of redundant. Not redundant, I'm sorry. What do you call that? An oxymoron.
Yes.
you know, forced freedom. So, but basically, give people the liberty to express themselves freely. Now, when we say, when the cultural relatives say that, hey, no, guess what? These Western, Midwestern cultures, they don't want freedom. They want whatever religious, political views. They want to be oppressed. Well, no, it's the leaders of these nations that oppress
them. Persuaded the people.
Yeah, that oppress the people to such an extent that we believe that this whole culture is just this one leader, you know? Which is untrue. These people still want to express themselves. It's not their leader. So,
yeah.
In a sense, we do want everyone to be free, but at the same time, we don't want to cross borders in such a way that we just bomb everyone. I think no one wants that.
Yeah, it's a tough situation.
Yeah.
So at what point does intervention become demanded? Like, say, when you have a situation like Syria, where they're nearly killing their own people. I mean, is that justification for going into another country?
Yeah. I mean, it might depend on the numbers. That sounds like inhumane. It's like the question, like, how many okay, if you had puppies and you had a human child, how many puppies would you kill to save one human child? You know, yeah. How do you value a human life? Yeah. Is the killing of one person fine? Do you cross the line when it's 100?
And you justify saving one life by killing others by going into war? So it's
how do you mean which life is worth more? You know,
exactly.
Another thing is, like, there are some views in some cultures, and this is, I guess, contradictory to what I said earlier about freedom, but some cultures really do believe that there are freedoms that should be oppressed. Now, think about the dogmatic Muslims who actually religiously pursue hindering females from being educated. They believe that it is culturally the duty of the females to not be educated and just to serve the males. Now, that is taking away freedom of essentially half of all population there, you know? So how does... Or, well, not half, maybe, because of the whole...
Well, that goes beyond just cultural subjectivity to beyond logic. You can't justify it with logic that women are subhuman or that they should be denied rights.
Yeah.
So I think there's universal morals that can be founded, and that's... It's the same thing with homosexuality. You can't justify through any logic that homosexuality is a sin, just arbitrarily. So with that situation, I don't think that applies.
Yeah, so, I mean, cultural relatives would say, hey, guess what? They're just as right in believing it, but you clearly see that it is illogical to think that any normal human being is, you know, subhuman.
Yeah, clearly. There's limits.
So we need, like, universal laws or something? Maybe we need an America. Oh, wait, that's happened.
So. I mean, we don't need the universal law set in stone, because everything, the universe is ever-changing, ever-evolving, but at the same time, we've all reached certain levels of understanding of morality, in some senses.
Yeah, we do have morals, so that is true. And morals are very much based on people, rather than these external forces who are supposed to write this in, you know, books and laws and stones, literally stones. And have laws.
Animal rights. Like, how do you determine that? That's such a tricky
concept. Such a hairy concept. Like, if you ever go to, like, a philosophy 101 course and people talk about animal rights, oh, shit is going to go crazy. Everyone is just going to have so many emotional moments, you know?
It's good debate, though. There's good conversation to be had there.
Yeah, it's very cool. I guess, to an extent, we're all speciesists, you know? We have value.
We're on team people. I mean, we.
Yeah. But then at the same time, there are animalists or animal right activists who believe that animals should have some laws. I mean, some rights as animals. They think and they feel pain too. Yeah, how are we justified in taking animals?
That's the main thing, is the pain aspect. Like, yeah. Even though a crab is a crab and it may not be intelligent, when you boil it alive to cook it, if there's something inhumane about that. Which is tough.
Yeah, but then there's a slippery slope from there, you know? If you don't kill animals, why kill lower animals and lower forms of life? And then
Do you classify something as a lower form of life to begin with? Is it based off intelligence?
If you base it on just pain, you're going by the base of the neurological system. Yeah. When the nerves develop, then you're just like, okay, Porifera and Cnidaria are fine, but nematodes, oh no, they feel pain. Yeah.
It's tricky.
Yeah, and then you can even go down a very steep slope race up and be like, hey, everything has, if they have a consciousness, then why are we eating plants? Why are we even touching the bacteria around us? Why is the hierarchy?
You have to draw the line somewhere.
Yeah, like animals kill other animals.
And you have to be reasonable, in my opinion. You have to realize that there's a cycle of life going on, as much as you want to deny that.
Yeah.
That has to exist. Like, animals will overpopulate if you don't control them to an extent.
Yeah. Humans will overpopulate if no one controls them. That's going to happen.
Yeah, why are we not dealing with that problem as well?
That's why wars happen.
I guess it's a self-controlling population.
I never thought of it that way. We fight wars so that we can control our own population. We can't overpopulate. we're killing the Middle East.
Honestly, poverty is the problem with that. If you're talking about population growth of overpopulation, because it's just the people who are overpopulating the earth are not the first world countries. It's all the third world countries that have 10 kids just so half of them stay alive. I mean,
yeah, and I mean that's their mindset. They do. They want to live just as much as people over here want to live. You know,
It's strange. Like I guess we've talked about that before. How like they have people of lower stature create kids as the way of leaving a mark on the earth, but at the same time, if you have less money than somebody who's able to raise a kid, why would you have so many kids that you can't even afford to feed them?
Yeah,
it's a strange concept.
I think money is a strange concept, you know.
Oh yeah,
there is so much disparity. Even you know, I don't remember the precise news article, but there was one where he said that America's disparity in the top 20% and the bottom 20% is almost as close to some third world countries.
Yeah, I think it's worse than some, if I'm correct. Yeah.
But I don't think that's a big problem, because America doesn't have like a very bottom 20%, as they have a very high top 20%.
Yeah,
you know?
It's more the other
in
way.
In other countries, the top 20% is like America's middle 40 to 50%.
And
the people who are, you know, low, they're like dying every day.
Of course.
And so, what if we do control global poverty, you know? What happens then?
Well, if we had all nations living in relatively close economic statuses, like, you wouldn't have people having 10 kids, so everyone would have one or two kids, and the Earth could sustain that. Simple as that, no?
Yeah, it's understandable. But here's, I think, a question. If you have a lot of money, would you be willing to give up all your money so that the four people around you have just as money as you do and you're all the same amount of rich?
Me personally, that's the thing, that you say that until you get into the position of power.
No, you're like, dude, I worked so hard for all this money and I have all this money saved up.
It's human nature.
Maybe I'm just going to save a little more for myself, you know? That's a question. That's why, you know,
it's easy to say when you yourself don't have that.
That's why all these billionaires, and so many billionaires who've been billionaires for the first time, this is their first generation of being billionaires, you know? They built this empire themselves. They feel justified in saying that I'm going to die with all my money because I worked for it. If other people want money, let them work for it, you know?
So the problem is human greed. How do you control greed?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can try to rationalize with them and say, hey, guess what? You know, there are certain sort of scenarios. You were born with a genetic disposition to be able to be manipulative and be a greedy, avarice bastard. you try to rationalize with them, but I don't think that works. You have very few Bill Gates and a lot more Donald Trumps, you know?
It's not that there's a multitude of evil people in the world, it's just that few evil people with a lot of money can really take away wealth from people who need it.
Yeah, yeah.
That makes sense.
Not so many evil people.
No.
Yeah. Okay, can there be lots of evil people who are very poor?
Well, how do you define evil?
Yeah.
Greedy? I mean, is that the question?
I don't know. I mean, they would be a little greedy because they don't have enough and they would really like some. Because
Here's the question. Is there a way to genetically, at some point, genetically modify a predisposition to be greedy in somebody?
But when that...
Modify that out.
That would really, really be a controversial idea, because if you've read Brave New World, they pretty much genetically make people so that they don't have any of these negative qualities, but they go a step further. They go a step further in that they don't want people to feel any sort of sadness. So these people, and guess what? The world still has to be productive, right? And if people aren't sad, they engineer people so that they are happy working. So they essentially make human slaves. Robots,
yeah.
Human slaves. And then there are these top 2% who aren't born with this genetic engineering.
And they control everything.
You know? And it kind of seems like a good idea if you're that 2%. Because think about it. All the global poverty, all the evil, all the sadness is gone.
It's so frustrating because you have all these thinkers, you have all these people that are trying to create these utopian-like states. And every single plan that gets presented, there's always holes in it. There's always going to be problems. There's always going to be problems with human nature, with just the way people work. It's,
Well, that's, you know, it's the problem with humanity is actually a very convoluted and a very, very complicated issue and a multifaceted issue. So you can't really just, you know, have one fix-it-all solution.
No.
And what we really, really want in this society is a quick fix, you know?
Yeah, that's more of an American idea, really.
Well, yeah, but it's a global idea to believe that, you know, there's this one thing that can be done which will make the world better, yeah. You know? There might not be anything that's like that, but we want to believe. We still believe!
Nuclear power. You have the complexity of it because you have this massive need for energy and we're wasting away our fossil fuels.
Yeah.
And nuclear energy seems like this godsend that I believe like three barrels of oil is the equivalent to one miniature ion of nuclear power. Yeah. So you have this immense field of energy here, but at the same time, something goes wrong and you've decimated an area for 1,000 years.
Yeah. First, so I believe that if nuclear power does do all these wonders and we can harvest it with enough technology, I believe we should go for as many nuclear nations as possible. However, there is a possibility that, you know, firstly, we need to understand that if everyone has nuclear energy and someone goes a little crazy and wants to nuke someone, the whole world will end as we know it. There will be no one, not even the person who wants to attack. He will not exist. Nothing will exist as we know it. So, with that in mind, we don't want to. The only people who'd ever want to detonate something of nuclear force now would be the crazies, right? Who don't want not only others to exist, but themselves to exist. So, for that, we can only do one thing. Either just, you know, the whole mental illnesses should be checked more, but that's kind of elusive because, you know, how do you really check for mental illnesses? Mm-hmm. What really needs to be done is have many layers of checking before anyone can actually have unitary power to do anything with a nuclear, you know, energy field shield or something like that. So, but basically,
beyond the people that nuclear energy could be in the wrong hands with, just nature itself, we've seen in multiple occasions where, and with Japan, with the earthquake, and it seems like we are not able to as a species, we don't have the ability to control it fully.
Yeah, that's true. Like, if there's, like, a huge storm and somehow,
yeah.
you know, nuclear... not only radiation, but power was used, and, you know, there was a big explosion, and everything ended.
It just seems far too risky to me to just by the odd chance that something happens and that's it. That land is going to be unuseful for the next... It's far too dangerous for our Earth, I think, to be playing with technology we are not fully capable of using yet.
Yeah, so maybe we just need to research it more before we can, you know, utilize it properly. Yeah.
Well, that's my thought on it, at least.
But somehow, you know, countries are still going to make use of nuclear power.
But at the same time, if oil does run out and we have no other source of energy, I guess that's kind of a risk we have to take at some point.
I mean, there was another article that said that by 2030, America would be the highest producer of oil. It's supposed to, like, open up some of its factories up north.
Oh, yeah.
And America is going to have oil is going to be way cheaper, and everyone's going to want oil from America, and America is going to become a lot more stronger in its economy. But then that's, like, America's last resort, you know?
Yeah.
After that, when those run out, which are supposed to run for, like, at least 100 years, I guess, but after that, it's gone.
Canada has a massive wealth of oil. The Keystone Pipeline they're trying to build from Canada to America.
Obama. That Muslim.
I don't know. So we definitely have enough for at least our lifetime. The problem is after that.
Yeah.
Kind of fucking the generations after us.
Yeah, and we do need to think about the next generations, you know, regardless of what we think of generations.
Well, that's my philosophy, but apparently the majority of humans don't think that way.
Yeah, yeah. would just do stuff for us now. I mean, that's unfortunately how we get into so many of these traps, you know? The previous generations, they do like stuff and say, you know, hey, guess what? It's going to be good for the next 60 years. That's pretty much our life. Let's just do it.
That's been our society for the last 200 years now, ever since the industrialization occurred. It's always been about... It's been very nearsighted, if you know it.
But I guess, you know, you can see the rationale behind it. I mean, a person would think that, you know, this is it. This is my only life. This is the world. We don't somehow... We tend to isolate ourselves from the world when you think about future and success, you know? Like... We'd rather want two pizzas now than go to the gym every day.
Yeah.
Which is a completely different topic, you know, going to the gym is kind of useless.
It's the whole quick fix thing. If there's not a quick fix, you don't really want to hear about it. You think it's too much work, it's too much long-term effort.
Today's word is...
Bun cum.
What?
Bun cum.
Bun cum. Insincere.
What?
What does it mean?
It's a word. Insincere speech making by a politician intended merely to please local constituents. Bun gum. And you could use that a lot. Yeah.
Use it with a cigarette.
AKA preaching to the choir.
Yeah. That's a load of bun gum.
Bun gum. Sounds so sad. Somebody use that in English. Because if you put an M instead of an N, it changes the meaning entirely. Bun gum.
This scene. Can I be perfectly honest about this work?
This is straight bun.
This shouldn't be that funny, but it is.
Greetings!
Bun cum.
I'll say that every time she says greetings. I'll say bun cum.
Give it a send off.
All right, then. This was episode 00. Next time, we'll have...
00?
Yeah, well, then we start with 01. It's a thing.
Episode 00. It's been decided.
Episode 00. All right, so, I hope you, whoever you are, maybe an old lady or a cat, hope you enjoyed it, and we'll be back next time with topics with more... interesting information
or not,
or
that's,
not,
that's to be decided.
It might be the same. I don't know, just post the same thing again. All right, then
tell us if this was even listenable or enjoyable to anybody out there. All right, peace.